welcome to another episode of Book Squad Goals.
Book Squad Goals!
How are you guys doing?
I'm good. I'm just hanging out here with the pea. He thinks that he's going to get fed again, but it's not true.
Well, speaking of the pea, I have a question for you guys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually your question, but I'm going to ask it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I couldn't think of a good intro topic.
Well, why don't we just pretend like you came up with it, because it's your episode.
I came up with this.
It's your time to shine.
I came up
you
with
did?
This. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I bet it's going to be a really good question.
I feel like it is. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Go for it.
We are talking about The Leftovers this week, and as such, I would like to ask you guys, which one of your pets is most likely to get raptured, and how would your other pets react?
Susan, I feel like you had a really, like, gut reaction to this, so maybe you should go first.
Okay. I don't know really why I feel this way. I just feel like Mabel would be raptured. And
poor Mabel.
I know. I really can't even explain why. It was just the first thing that came to mind. She would certainly disappear. And Roger would be distraught, I think, because they are best friends.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I really just can't explain why. I just know it would be Mabel.
Emily said this in the group chat as a suggestion, and then Susan was like, oh God, Mabel.
Yeah, I don't know why. I just know it would be her. And I know Roger would be coming to me, like, with his sad eyes, being like, yo,
yeah,
where's my girl? They're best friends. They really are.
Well, I mean, like, it's sort of in the book how there's really no explanation for who goes and why. It's just sort of like, you know.
Yeah.
You just know.
Yeah, it would. It just feels right.
Mm-hmm. Well, hi, this is Emily, and I have four pets, which I sometimes forget because two of them are very quiet. Yes. So when I was first thinking about this, I thought it would be my cat, Cersei, who would get raptured. But the longer I thought about it, and the longer I realized that I have two other pets that I forgot about, the more I realized it would probably be Scout the gecko, because she's an idiot. And if anybody's going to disappear, it's Scout, because, I don't know, she's just a doofus.
How do you know when a gecko is a doofus?
Look, just trust me on this one. I just know.
All right.
I just know. I think all geckos are doofuses. They're just not that smart. And I'm sorry if you're a gecko lover, you're not loving the gecko. You don't love geckos because they're smart. Like, you're not like, I'm going to get a gecko because I want a really intelligent animal. Like, that's not a thing. So don't be offended. I love my gecko. She's just not that smart. Anyway, I think Cersei would be really upset because she really wants to eat Scout and tries to on a daily basis, and I think she would miss that. So, there you go.
Well, this is Kelly, and honestly, I feel like neither of them would get raptured. I mean, I have one pet, but we live with another pet, which is Fig. So Penelope and Fig. And I feel like it would be too convenient for either of them if one of them got raptured. So they'd both be stuck here forever together.
Penelope would be really disappointed that Fig didn't get raptured.
Yeah, exactly.
She'd be like, why didn't you stay? I mean, why did you stay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Aww,
like, either way, it would bring Penelope too much peace because she would be away from Fig. So. So, yeah, we're talking about The Leftovers this week. I am just going to issue a blanket spoiler warning now.
Should we also mention that Mary's not here?
Oh, who? Mary's not here.
Mary got raptured.
She got raptured. Yeah. Realistically, she probably would be the one to get raptured out of us.
That's true. She's the pure one.
The pure one. Not that that matters, as we will
Not that that
discuss.
Matters. Yeah.
So, I'm going to read the summary from Goodreads.
So again, spoilers. Sorry.
Yeah.
I interrupted.
Oh, no, it's fine. We're going to spoil everything about this book. We've basically decided that it's impossible to talk about books without spoiling them to the, or like with the thoroughness that we want. So sorry, everyone. Not that, I mean, this book doesn't have that many like huge twists or anything, but.
No.
Okay. So summary from Goodreads. What if, whoosh, right now with no explanation, this summary has some dramatic.
I love that whoosh is in the summary.
Yeah.
Like whoosh.
Got some flourishes in here.
Real good.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I interrupted myself. A number of us simply vanished. Would some of us collapse? Would others of us go on one foot in front of the other as we did before the world turned upside down? That's what the bewildered citizens of Mapleton, who lost many of their neighbors, friends, and lovers in the event known as the Sudden Departure, cap S, cap D, have to figure out. Because nothing has been the same since it happened. Not marriages, not friendships, not even the relationships between parents and children. Kevin Garvey, Mapleton's new mayor, wants to speed up the healing process to bring a sense of renewed hope and purpose to his traumatized community. Kevin's own family has fallen apart in the wake of the disaster. His wife, Lori, has left to join the Guilty Remnant, a homegrown cult whose members take a vow of silence. His son, Tom, is gone too, dropping out of college to follow a sketchy prophet named Holy Wayne. Only Kevin's teenage daughter, Jill, remains, and she's definitely not the sweet A student she used to be. Kevin wants to help her, but he's distracted by his growing relationship with Nora Durst, a woman who lost her entire family on October 14th and is still reeling from the tragedy, even as she struggles to move beyond it and make a new start. With heart, intelligence, and a rare ability to illuminate the struggles inherent in ordinary lives, Tom Perata has written a startling, thought-provoking novel about love, connection, and loss. This book came out in 2011, and it was published by St. Martin's Press. Today, while I was at work, I was reading through our company's new code of conduct, and I realized that I, prior to, or what I thought before was that I wasn't supposed to ever mention that I work at this company because it would be a conflict of interest. But I realized reading today, they were like, if you ever decide to talk about one of our books on a blog or whatever, make sure you say that, make sure you're clear that you work for our company and that your opinions are your own. So I'm just going to put this out there now. The secret publishing company that I work for is Macmillan, St. Martin's Press. Now you all know. And these opinions are mine and mine alone. Disclaimer over.
Okay.
Okay. So there's a lot to talk about here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, my first discussion point that I have is, like, obviously grief and loss are central to this book, as is survivor's, as is survivor's guilt. Nora's storyline, who we just mentioned, Nora Durst, who lost her husband and her two kids in the sudden departure, is a particularly harrowing portrayal of what it would mean to lose everything. But what I think is really interesting is that the novel focuses around this family, the Garvey family, and they did not really experience any significant loss. Like, all of their immediate family remains intact. I don't even think they lost any, like, you know, secondary family members or anything. They really just, like, know people in the community who were lost. So I thought that was an interesting choice to make, to focus on a family that didn't have that experience but still completely unravels anyway. And I was wondering, why do you guys think that Tom Perata made that choice?
Well, that's interesting because I really didn't even think about that reading the book. I didn't stop and think, like, man, they didn't really suffer any major losses, because it seems like they did,
right,
you know?
Right.
I think that one thing that I noticed, especially with the Tom character, Tom is the older son of the family. He's off at college when the rapture happens. Well, I keep calling it the rapture, but, like, whatever.
They refer to it as the sudden departure in the book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, because Tom has this feeling that he has suffered this, well, not that he suffered this loss, but he's like sort of like obsessed with this one person who was sort of just like an acquaintance that went away, that disappeared.
A childhood friend who he hadn't spoken to in years.
Right. He's like, I don't know that I would have even said hey to him if I'd saw him the day before the sudden departure, right? But I think that was sort of interesting to focus on at least one of these characters sort of like becoming obsessed with this loss of someone who wasn't central in their lives, because it kind of shows how people, people affect us in ways that we don't always realize until they're gone. And like, we, like, people become obsessed and cling on to death, like, even if they weren't touched by those people in real life, right? Like, people are kind of just like gravitate towards death in this weird way. And this is not technically death, but it's sort of like a stand-in for death,
right?
Because like that's what this is really about. So I found that really interesting. Yes. In the way that people who leave us become sort of like these like martyrs. And like we tend to focus on the good things about them, and then we have the reverend character who's sort of like doing the opposite of that. But yeah, I don't know. So I thought that was interesting and something that we had an opportunity to see highlighted more because we were looking at a family that didn't lose someone super close.
Yeah.
We were able to see more of this like obsession with death just in general that isn't really connected to a personal familial loss or the loss of someone close. I don't know if that made sense or...
No, totally.
Yeah.
No, I agree. Like, and I think it's interesting just, like, thinking about, like, how it was, like, not just an event that impacted a small community, but the entire world. So this sudden departure that occurs, like, occurs all across all types of religions, all types of, like, all countries, all over the world. And there's no rhyme or reason to who disappears, as we said before. And I think, like, the thing that makes these people start to unravel in a way that they might not if it had been, like, a tragedy, like the way that, you know, something like a natural disaster or something, where if you don't lose someone in that or know people who were involved in that, like, you're, like, kind of at a remove from it, even if you still, like, empathize and everything. But in something like this, it's like there's no explanation for what happened. Like there's no, I mean, obviously when something horrible happens, there's still no explanation. Like, why did that happen? But this is like what even happened, you know?
Right.
Like these people just disappeared. And so I think like, even if I guess like part of it is just the fact that this thing even occurred is what people are really freaking out about. Like ultimately,
I kept thinking we were going to find out the reason.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of sad I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why I can't explain why it would be Mabel. I just know it would.
I kind of knew that we wouldn't just because of the type of book this is. And also, you know, not to brag or anything, but I did, Tom and I have met in person. Ooh. And I did hear him, like, and it was right around the time this book came out. So he was at the Decatur Book Festival. Shout out to the Decatur Book Festival. He was at the Decatur Book Festival and he read from this book and he was kind of like talking about, you know, this idea of like people disappearing and not knowing what happened to them. So like even before reading the book, it kind of seemed clear to me that the purpose behind this book has nothing to do with like what happened. This isn't supposed to be like sci-fi or like a religious book or anything like that. It's more like, Kelly, what you were saying, it's more about exploring the loss.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't really need to know what happened to these people to explore that.
Yeah. And I think like it was like another really interesting thing about the book, and like a theme of the book is religion, but not, it's not a religious book and it's not a book that's saying any one way is the right way, you know, but like it was interesting to see it framed as far as, like, how people who had this extreme faith before this event occurred would react to it afterwards. Because, like, it wasn't, like, all Christians or all Muslims. It was, like, people from all different types of religions. And so the people who are left...
Atheists.
And the people who are left from these various... People from these different ideologies had to, like, reckon with the fact that this thing occurred. Do we want to believe that the rapture is real, or do we want to believe that this is just some weird coincidence? And if it is, then how do we explain that, like, via the religion that we're a part of? And, like, some people, you know, completely lost their faith after it happened. And some people became, like, even more devout and, decided, like, we didn't get taken because we are bad and we have to repent now. And then other people were like, the reason that I wasn't taken is because it's not religious and the people who were taken were bad. Like, the reverend who is, like, in this town and sort of, like, loses his mind a little bit and starts
like, giving out newsletters of, like, here are all the bad things that...
He, like, becomes obsessed with revealing these truths about the people from their town who have disappeared, trying to dig up reasons why these people are bad.
Which, like, to be honest, I would have been, like, totally living for that newsletter if I was part of this.
I know, right? I, like, would be
give me
so
the dirt.
It was basically Gossip Girl.
I mean, clearly everyone else was living for it too, because like everyone at that dance knew about
exactly.
it, you know, so like, yeah, people
I would
were
say
into it.
For religion, it's not, it almost has nothing to do with like what people believed in or did before, but it's more about what people turn to in like moments of desperation. And that's where the religion comes in, and where the cults start to happen.
Yeah.
Shit gets real culty is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Because you're so, like, sensitive to being swayed in one direction or the other that...
Yeah. I mean, I remember thinking when they were, you know, when Tom and Christine are just disguising themselves as barefoot people, I remember being like, oh, yeah, like, I would be a barefoot person.
Just praying, smoking weed and having sex.
And, like, right now, I would describe myself as a secular Jew. But in a case like that, I'd be like, yeah, I would 100% get on board with one of those things. It would probably be the barefoot people.
At least that one isn't as culty, and it's more just like, they're just like a bunch of hippies, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, do whatever you want. It's the total opposite of the Watchers.
The guilty remnant. Well, yeah, because it's like, do you turn to virtue and kind of obsession with that kind of thing, or do you just think like, fuck it, who cares, and like just do what feels good while you're
there? I don't know, because like I could get behind the vow of silence thing, but I could not get behind the having to smoke cigarettes every time I'm out in public thing.
That is rough.
Like, that is disgusting. That is rough.
I appreciated Meg's hesitance.
Oh my god, when she just like gags when she tries to.
Same funniest. Girl, same.
Yeah, that would be me. I would be throwing up. Like, no.
So, well, now that we've started talking about it, why don't we just talk about and explain a little bit about the guilty remnant?
Yes.
So, it's this group that forms, as the Goodreads description described it, a quote-unquote homegrown cult, where the people of Mapleton, like certain people, basically decide to take a vow of silence, and they all move into a communal living space and all start wearing white and constantly smoking cigarettes, and they are assigned, like, they take on the duty of watching the other members of the community of Mapleton, and they go out and basically follow people around and just, like, hover around like ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
They're super fun, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
They're a hoot.
Yeah.
Great to have at a party. Do you guys, like, understand? Because, like, I understand that they were trying to just be, like, a constant reminder of what occurred. But, like, what is their mission exactly? And, like, like, why, like, what do they believe? Do you guys
I don't know.
Understand?
Mm-mm.
I do not know.
Mm-mm.
Like, I was trying really hard to grasp. And, like, last night I watched the first episode of the TV show, and I was trying to explain it to Ivan when we were watching, and I was like, because he was like, what is, like, what are, what's the point of this? I was like, well, and then I started trying to explain it, and I was like, I honestly don't know, like, what they really, like, do, I don't know if the, because it's weird, because they seem to feel, they seem to be presenting guilt and trying to remind people of guilt and, like, we are bad, which is why we're still here. But then they have this strange sense of superiority.
Yeah.
So it's really confusing.
Yeah.
Why do you guys think Lori, who is the wife of, or the former wife of Kevin and one of our other, like, main characters, like, why do you think she leaves her family to go to this place?
I don't know. I thought it was really interesting because half of the family ends up in a cult.
Yeah.
Yeah, just different
cults. Two different cults.
Yeah. And Jill almost joins them too. Or, like, starts to toy with the idea of joining them.
Right. Yeah, but, like, the reason that they're getting Jill to join the cult is because she witnessed a murder, basically.
Yeah.
So that was sketch as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the reason they wanted her to join the cult, right?
I think so.
Like, because they started working real hard on her after that.
Yeah, but I think they're also, like, sort of trying to get everyone to join the cult. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like, they have these, like, files on people that they, like, pass around. And I think they, like, target people who seem weaker, who might be more susceptible to their ideas if they harass them enough.
Right. Here's my question. Which cult is worse?
The one impregnating teenage girls, maybe.
Yes.
That would be my vote.
However, the other one's murdering people.
Yeah.
But, like, not that many.
Not that many people. Well, not that many teenage girls got impregnated, so.
That's true.
I mean, okay, to me, they're both bad. The Guilty Remnant seems more miserable to be a part of.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the other one's just, like, all about hugs. Which I understand.
Right, and who doesn't love a good hug?
I mean, and you know what? Actually, in that part of the story, when he was, like, giving his speeches and saying, like, let me hug you and I can take your pain away, I was like, I could see how people could get into this.
Yeah.
Like, just hug fests, you know?
Yeah.
The sex with underage girls, not so much. I'd be like, whoa, that's not...
Let's take a step back.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're both pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'd be a barefoot person.
Yeah.
I would probably just be a normal person.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd probably develop some kind of drug problem.
Yeah. I feel like I really identified with Jill the most because she was sort of, like, trying to do her normal everyday thing, but also sort of, like, struggling with, like, the purpose behind, like,
yeah.
She's like, oh, maybe I should go to class. And then it was like, oh, but why?
Yeah.
You know, like, it wasn't that hard to convince her to not go on with, like, what she normally do.
Right. I feel like I'd probably be Amy.
Oh, man. I felt for Amy, though. You know, like.
I know. That's why I think I'd be her.
So let's talk about, like, so Jill and Amy. It's fine.
But yeah,
just in case
we're just bouncing around.
Just in case you haven't read the book, Jill is the teenage daughter, and so her and her dad are the only people left in their house. And Jill develops a friendship with this other girl in her grade named Amy, who and Jill up until the sudden departure was like a straight A student and was very like your typical like. Type A high school student who's like very like well behaved, doesn't do drugs, doesn't drink, doesn't go to parties. She's like, you know, And Amy is like the bad girl, sort of. And the two of them mm-hmm. are working at the same place and become friends that way. And you know, as things start to unravel in the family, and Jill's mom goes off to join the Guilty Remnant, and her brother disappears into a cult and they don't hear from him anymore. She, like, as that's happening, her friendship with Amy is developing. And so then for her whole, like, school year, she just starts, like, ditching class, and, like, her grades drop, and she's getting high all the time and drinking, and, like, and then Amy, it comes from sort of, like, a bad family situation, so Jill invites her to, like, stay over most nights, and basically Amy ends up moving into the house with Jill and her dad, and things, you know, go places from there.
Yeah.
I was honestly surprised that, like, it didn't get more, so, like, a connection starts to form between Kevin and Amy, and it's very uncomfortable, and it's, like, always there from the beginning that you, like, sense this sort of weird, like, sexual tension, because Amy is, like, constantly coming downstairs, like, in her sleep underwear. And Jill, from Jill's perspective, she keeps being like, I wish Amy wouldn't wear that stuff around my dad. It makes me feel weird. And then Kevin is like, wow, like, she's really pretty, but that's disgusting. Don't look at her. Like,
for the record, that's not why I'd be Amy.
Yeah. So, but for the whole book, like, that's sort of a thing. And then, like, really nothing happens between them.
I'm glad.
Me too.
Same.
I'm glad that they were, or they kind of, like, developed this adult friendship, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but you know what? I kind of thought something more was going to happen, just because, again, I've read other Tom Perrotta books, and I was like, is he going to go there? Because he definitely could.
Yeah. Like, I kind of expected it to go there, and then I was sort of, like, relieved when it didn't.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really want, because I liked Kevin, mostly.
Right. You don't want to dislike him.
Yeah.
Like, just as a reader, you want to root for him. And you can't, really, if he starts an affair with his daughter's friend.
Right.
Just can't.
Right.
Also, then I couldn't be Amy anymore. It would be a step too far.
Well, that's what this is really about.
So what about Amy do you identify with, Susan?
So, I feel like Amy is lost in this way where she turns to, like, just trying to find affection where she can find it. And, like, maybe that is too much information about me. I feel like in a situation where everything felt lost and I didn't really have a family, I would just be looking for love, like, from my friends, from some dude playing a weird spin the bottle game, from, like, a married guy, like, whoever. I think I would just look for comfort where I could get it without really going too far, but just, like, having that little bit of comfort.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, it totally okay. makes sense. I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah. What about you, Kelly? Which one do you identify with the most? Because we both said ours.
I don't know. Maybe I identify with Kevin, because I think, like, he is sort of doing this thing where he's like, okay, like, I'm lucky. I didn't lose anything. I need to be normal and try to, like, get back on my feet and make sure that my family is okay and, like, try to, like, just be normal, get things back to normal. Because he's like, you know, I didn't suffer a loss, so there's no reason for me to be freaking out. And he's just kind of, like, in denial about everything. And as things, like, crumble around him, he's just, like, trying to, like, hold it together, and it's not working. And I think, like, I definitely understood where he was coming from. And, like, all of the choices and decisions that he made, I was like, I can understand why you would do that or say that or whatever. Right. And, like, because at the beginning of the book, you kind of get a sense that he's, you know, not taking it seriously enough. Because you see him from Laurie's perspective, and he seems kind of like he's, like, not being empathetic and not being understanding. And, like, just kind of, like, you know, pull yourself up and continue and stop moping. But, like, he's just trying to, like, tell himself that so that things can not feel so hopeless. And I get I understand that.
Yeah. And he kind of feels, it seems like he's taken on this responsibility to make everybody feel better.
Yeah. Like, he becomes the mayor.
He becomes the mayor. And not only that, but he has these, like, sort of, like, open office hours every day where people can come and talk to him. And, like, really, he's given 110%.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah, and he takes in Amy without any questions. And he, like, is trying.
Buys her Christmas presents, you know.
Yeah. And he's trying his best to be, like, the dad that Jill needs, because he's like, I'm not gonna like scold you and punish you for like acting out in your grief, but I am going to tell you that I'm not okay with the things you're doing, like, you know. But he like doesn't, in some ways, like, you could say he's like not doing a great job parenting, but I'm also like, what is he gonna do? Like, isn't it better for him to, like, maintain, like, a decent relationship with his daughter than to, like, completely push her away? I don't know. I'm not a parent. So, it's hard.
I just, like, okay. I thought it was really sweet how on Christmas Day, he sort of, like, reflecting back on the day is, like, it was so fun just, like, having them there. And, like, I wish I'd got them more presents because it was so great seeing them so excited about everything. And then we played Yahtzee. And, like, it was just really fun. And then they just wanted to go. And I was like, that's fine because we'd had a really fun day. And I was just like, that's so sweet. I just thought that was really sweet.
Yeah. He's, like, a really sweet dude, I think. He's just, like, a little dumb sometimes, but
he makes sweaty omelets, we know that.
Yes. He very much grows on you as a character, because I like didn't really trust him at first, and then the more you get to know
that's
him,
that's probably because he's a dude and you're like, I don't know about this.
Yeah,
dude.
I'm suspicious of you automatically.
Right.
Yeah. But okay, again, it's just while we're on the subject of that Christmas day.
Yes.
How strange was it that when his wife showed up, he was just like, oh, hey, how are you doing? Come on in.
Yeah, I know. It was really...
I just didn't expect him to react that way. I don't know.
I know. Like, I didn't know. I was surprised, too, but I was also... I mean, it made sense because that's kind of his way of trying to be this, like, peacemaker person who's just like, let me make sure everyone feels comfortable. And he's like, you guys hungry? Let me get you some food. Like...
Yeah.
And like, you know, and I think he also like knew that if like he wanted to do everything he could to not push his wife away even more, even though like obviously she's like he should know she's not coming back. But
it was just such an interesting contrast to what happened when they go to visit Meg's fiance.
Yes.
Because that happens before this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They go visit Meg's fiance because Meg, if you haven't read the book, Meg is like Laurie's little like
trainee,
protege or whatever. Yeah, trainee. And Meg, so she's new to the cult, and like before she joined the cult, she was like supposed to get married like that weekend that she left. So they're all required to go visit their loved ones on Christmas Day, to sort of like remind them that everything isn't normal. Meg's fiance is not too excited to see her.
He's a huge asshole. He also...
And he's dating her cousin now.
Yeah.
His name is Gary, so, like, didn't you kind of know he would suck?
Yeah.
He seems like the name of someone who'd be like, Gary.
Yeah.
Get out of here, Gary.
That's my uncle's name.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's probably great.
I don't know any humans named Gary.
It just seems like not the name of, like, a very young guy.
Yeah.
Which is what this Gary was supposed to be.
My friends have a cat named Gary.
See, I like
that. My aunt and uncle's Scotty dog was named Gary.
Wow.
Oh.
None of my pets are named Gary.
Well, he was a good dog.
Maybe you should consider getting another dog named
Gary. You'll get a gecko.
Gary the Gecko, that's kind of, yeah.
Well, SpongeBob has a pet snail named Gary.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Speaking of SpongeBob.
Yeah, Nora.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that.
Good transition.
So, do we want to talk about the significance of SpongeBob?
Yes. So, Nora is like, kind of, like, the parts with her are just so fucking sad. Like,
yeah.
It's so sad.
I really like her, though.
No, I like her, too. And I, what I really, one of, okay, so let's talk about SpongeBob first. So, she, she lost her, on the day of the sudden departure, she is basically in the town known as this, like, almost like a martyr figure because she lost the most. Like, she lost her husband and both of her children.
She's like, she refers to herself as the saddest woman in the world a couple of times.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she, like, basically, like, the whole town feels sorry for her, and she's, like, going through this thing of, like, having to figure out what her life means, like, when one day she is this, like, wife and mother, and the next day she's not. And, like, one of the main ways that she is, like, coping with her grief about losing her children is that she starts watching SpongeBob because her kids loved SpongeBob. And she, like, basically buys all of the box sets of the show and watches the episodes, like, one by one. And then she starts, like, a journal where she, like, writes new things each time she watches one of the episodes. And it's, like, a comfort to her, like, a sort of almost, like, obsessive comfort. And, like, I thought that was so interesting, and I related to that so much because, you know, I haven't, I haven't experienced anything like that. But in times where I've been really, like, depressed or anxious, like, when I was a kid especially, like, I remember there was a whole summer where I watched, I went to sleep every night watching the movie Elf, like, every night during summer. Because that, like, comforted me for some reason. And just, like, that, the familiarity of something that is, like, so, you know exactly what it is and how it goes, and just, like, the sound of it is, like, a blanket, you know?
I fall asleep watching Friends a lot for that very reason. Exactly. Friends is my safety blanket.
Yes.
I also have a journal that I write to my brother in, so I could identify with that. I've been really bad about writing in it lately because part of me is, like, not. I know that I'm writing in this for myself and not for him, and, like, I want – it's hard for me to write – to him when I have trouble believing that he's going to be able to read it.
Right.
So, like, the only times I'm able to really, like, write in it successfully is when I can, like, convince myself, like, maybe he can see this somehow.
Right.
But I definitely, like, when she started doing that, I was like, I understand that. Because you always feel like, I think that's one of the hardest things about losing someone really close to you is, like, day to day, you, like, constantly think of, like, oh, I really want to tell this person this thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's when it, like, hits you really hard. Right. And so having a space where you can be like, okay, I'm going to just, like, write down all the things I want to tell this person so that they go somewhere.
Right.
It can be really comforting if you're in the right state of mind.
Totally. And there is a point when she start when it starts having or stops having the same effect on her,
right?
And like stops becoming as comforting because more time is passing and it, you know, they feel further and further away, I guess.
Yeah, there's this really simple statement where it just says, like, SpongeBob isn't working anymore.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh
yeah,
it's really sad. And another thing about her that I found really interesting or resonant is that she and Kevin start a relationship, and there's a whole section because, like, she's basically trying to, like, for so long she's separated herself from everyone, she's been not having friends and not going out and not, like, participating in the world, and she's like, maybe she goes to this dance that they have, is it like a monthly mixer or something in the town.
Mapleton, like, means fun.
Yeah. And so she decides to finally go to this with her sister and gets dressed up.
Karen.
And goes. And while she's there, like, she sort of starts talking with Kevin and they dance and they have a good time and then they start seeing each other. Well, then they decide to go on an impromptu trip to Florida together over the holidays, like, right after
Christmas. Oh my god, I love that.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, she tells him to call her, and it's, like, a month later, and he hasn't called her. And so, like, she calls him up, and, like, I think she's planning on saying, like, do you want to go out for a drink or something? Mm-hmm. And instead she goes, do you want to go to Florida? And I was like, yes, girl.
And this is,
get it.
He's, like, standing there while his ex-wife and her silent protege are standing in the kitchen. He's like, I'm going to call you back later with more details. Like,
yeah.
That is some shit I would do 100%.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want to go to Florida?
She was like, why not just ask for what I really want?
Yeah.
You know?
And he says yes. And so they go to Florida and they have this great time. And then, but then, like, you know, they get back and it's back to reality and they're dating, but she doesn't want to go out very often.
Back to life, back to reality. Mary's not here. I have to sing all by myself now.
Oh, sorry. It's just because I'm tone deaf. So I feel like.
Oh, I just don't even care. I just do it anyway.
So she starts, like, she shows him SpongeBob and, like, sort of, like, brings him into her, like, very, like, small world of sadness. And, like, she – but there's a whole section where she talks about, like, I used to be the best girlfriend. Like, mm-hmm. I was such a good girlfriend. I was so good at being supportive and being, like, this, you know, person that my boyfriend could come home to and, like, know that he would be comforted and, like, I would do all the nice things and give him massages and cook him dinner and all this stuff. And she's, like, she wants to be that person again because she wants to prove to herself that she's still, like, capable. And it was something she always prided herself in, but she just, like, can't do it. And that was, like, really hard to read, I think, because I could relate to that in some ways as well. Because when you are depressed, you can't, like, be the person that you want to be for other people, no matter how hard you try.
Yeah, well, also, when you spend all that time doing so much for other people, and then, I mean, they disappear and you feel like nothing matters anymore.
Yeah.
It's got to be pretty hard to, like, get back in that place where you can do that again. Like, because you feel like you're all.
It's
that's
interesting.
Left.
Sorry. No, it's okay. I kept thinking that
let's
you were.
Let's just apologize to each other forever.
Done, and then I. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna say what go. I was gonna say. If you're done.
Sorry. Go.
Sorry. Kelly, leave this in there.
Don't worry. I will.
So, and, like, I'm sorry, you just say, sorry, but you, that wasn't even on purpose that first time. Susan, you saying that made me think about, when she writes the letter to him at the, like, end of the book, and she's talking about what was going on when everyone disappeared. She was doing stuff for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, that, and, like, she... So she cooked this nice dinner for them, and then, like, you know, the son was crying, and her daughter was being a little shit, and then, like,
her husband wasn't paying attention.
The daughter spilled something?
Yeah, I think
so. Was it the daughter? Okay. So, like, she goes into the kitchen to, like, get some napkins to clean it up, and then she comes back, and when they're not there, she, like, doesn't know what to do if she's not helping them in some way. So she just kind of, like, cleans it up, you know, and then it's and this got just, like, from a practical standpoint too, then we can go back to this, but this is just a little aside. That part also got me thinking, like, I wonder if people could only disappear if someone wasn't, like, watching them, because the two stories we hear, I think we only hear the two stories, are, like, Jill is, like, watching a YouTube video when her friend disappears, so, like, not paying attention to her. Right. And then, like, her family, Nora's family doesn't disappear until she's, like, in the kitchen and she comes back and they're gone.
Right.
It just makes me wonder, like, what would have happened if she had been in the kitchen or if she had been sitting there with them? Like, would she have gone too? Would they have stayed? I'm just wondering if that has anything to do with it, just from, like, a practical standpoint.
That's really
I wonder too, but I kept looking for things like that where there would be a thing in common.
That was the only thing I could see just from those two stories is, like, it's really interesting that nobody, like, actually was, like, looking at someone when they disappeared, you know?
Yeah, and wasn't there, like, no, like, video footage of anyone disappearing either? Like,
yeah, it seems like to have disappeared, you know, like, you had to, like, no one could be watching it happen.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I didn't think more thing about Nora.
Yeah, let's go back. Sorry, that was just like
Sorry, I just thought it was too like about her not being able to like.
No, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'm sorry.
Sorry. One more thing. Wait. Sorry.
Wait. No, I'm sorry. No, okay, you go ahead. Sorry.
One more thing.
Sorry.
About her like not being able to be the good girlfriend. Like when she finds out in that newsletter about her husband's affair with the preschool teacher, she has this moment where she was like, she feels a relief because she is no longer mourning the person she thought she was mourning. And she realized that that specific person doesn't really exist. And.
Oh, baby.
She's crying. I'm going to let her out.
Oh, I was like, okay. What? Oh, I love you too. So, yeah. So that person doesn't exist. And so I guess to me, like I extrapolated that to apply to like almost everyone that, you know, when someone is gone, especially if it's sudden like that, you kind of romanticize the person that they were when in reality, like, maybe none of them are quite as great as we thought. And I don't know, I just, even though I haven't experienced that exact thing, like, I identified with that moment when she was like, ah, I feel a little bit better that I don't have to mourn this person that maybe didn't really exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to move past something when you're able to feel anger.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah, so, like,
absolutely.
That, I think, really helped her as far as, like, that part of her mourning, specifically her husband.
Yeah. I mean, she'll never get that with her kids, but at least she can sort of hate her husband a little.
I mean, not to talk about my brother again, but.
Please talk about your brother.
Okay.
We love to hear about him.
Okay.
No, I mean, but like, obviously, I thought about him a lot while I was reading this because this is a book about loss, and you know, if I'm thinking about like a major loss in my life, like losing my brother is a big thing,
right?
But I will say like the period of time where it hurt the least having lost him was when I was like mad at him for smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
I had this nice like month long period where like I wasn't really crying about it because I was just thinking about like how shitty it was that he smoked cigarettes and like continued to smoke cigarettes after he learned that he had cancer.
Right.
And like, that's just like BS. And like, I was like, I can be mad. Like, if I'm mad, then I'm not upset that you're gone because, like, I don't want to fucking see your face right now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and it gives you something to blame, kind of.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And if I can blame him, then I'm like, it's your own damn fault.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I know. I totally got that. This feeling of, like, relief. Like, oh, I don't have to miss him because I can just be mad at him instead.
Right.
Like, that felt really real. It's almost as if Tom Parada has lost somebody before in his life.
Almost. Do you know the details of that from your...
No, I just assume most people lose people in their life.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Tom and I talk, because we have our, you know, weekly phone conversations, we do talk about, you know, the people that we've lost. And, hey, Tom, I know you're listening.
I lost someone in a really preventable way. And I felt like anger kind of helped in that case too, where it was like, if you only would have done this differently. Like,
right, exactly.
You know, but yeah, it's definitely not the same thing, but I get where like, where anger kind of dulls sadness. You got to like replace one thing with the other for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then what happens after a little while is after you finish saying, if only you wouldn't have done or would have done this, you think,
what if I had
told them that, like, why didn't I say something when I could have, you know, like, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there's always that, so. I don't know. It's a whole, it's a vicious, vicious cycle of feelings that never quite settle into one.
Grief is a bitch, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And I think, like, bringing it full circle, this book, I mean, does a good job of, like, encapsulating that and, like, all of the different feelings that come with it and all the different types of grief there are, even grief for, like, people who, as we were talking about earlier, like, affected you in a way that you didn't realize until after.
I think the grief
or
over...
grief for people that...
Shit. You go and then I'll go.
Okay, real fast. I was just gonna say, or, you know, grief for people that aren't dead, but, like, for one reason or another have just, like, slipped out of your life.
Right.
And, like, even if you are... you're like, all right, well, that I have moved on in some sort of way. There's still, like, this, like, mourning for that person and not being able to be connected to a person that you once cared about.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually really similar to what I was going to say.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. But what I was going to say.
I'm so sorry.
Those moments when Kevin sees Lori and he's like, oh my gosh, I'm about to see her. And then it's like, wait, she looks totally different than what I saw.
She looks hot. Thanks.
Yeah, I like that he was still like, I'd fuck her.
Yeah, I'd fuck her.
Typical dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, moments like that when you see a person who's kind of not in your life anymore, but you still feel like you know them or you have some kind of connection to them, is this other kind of grief. And where, like, he recognizes, like, even, I mean, not only does she not look like the same person, but she is, like, chosen for whatever reason to do this thing. And so they've become completely different people than they were when they were together. And that's,
yeah,
I don't know. It's like this weird moment of, like, uncanny recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is, like, and also she has this vow of silence, so she doesn't speak.
Yeah, and she, like, pretends not to even see him, which is...
Right.
Which is how I act when I see an ex in public, but, like, for different reasons. I'm just like, what? Didn't see it.
Yeah, same. But, like, no, it is, and I think it's, like, back to the Christmas thing, I think it's kind of funny that, like, in some ways it was, like, he was being visited by the ghost of Christmas past, like, literally his wife is here in white clothing and not speaking and just, like, hovering, in the house that they used to share.
Yeah.
Like.
Right.
I thought that was kind of funny, but also kind of fucked up.
It's definitely
fucked
up.
Which I guess is the point.
Yeah. And Jill got her that present.
Jill.
Ugh. And then later, like, someone says they saw her mom, and she's like, did you see if she was using, like, a lighter?
Yeah, a lighter. And he was like, no, she used matches. And then she's like, motherfucking. It's fine. I mean, not exactly that, but it was.
But anger helps, right? So she's like.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, rather than being sad that her mom wasn't using the present, she was like, what a bitch.
Yeah. Fuck her.
Right.
Okay. So, I guess I'm just going to skip towards the end of this.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I just don't want
to, just had so much to say.
I know. I'm glad.
Yeah.
That's why I put so many discussion points, because I was like, what if we don't have enough to say? But, like, that never happens. Always. We always have enough to say. Okay. So, I guess, finally, I want to ask, like, what do you guys think of the ending? Like, what do you... So... Like, basically, several things happen. First of all, so Tom has been traveling the country with the impregnated...
Oh, we didn't even talk about we didn't even talk about Christine.
So let's talk about it really quick, then.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Poor Christine.
Susan says no. Oh, I thought you were like, saying, oh, I don't want to talk about her.
I don't want to discuss her. Christine is the chosen one of the prophet that Tom has been following, and she is, because she's the one who gets pregnant out of his, five or so
harem.
Teen wives.
I mean, if someone named Holy Wayne got me pregnant, though. No.
Oh, and let's just say Holy Wayne has a thing for Asian girls.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but which is Holy really Wayne is the most ridiculous name in the world. I love it. That's my band name. If not, if Guilty Remnant is taken, then Holy Wayne is my band name.
I did appreciate the complete, like, honesty of Tom Parada putting, like, making a male character who's obsessed with young, tiny Asian women, because that is such a thing, and it's so disgusting.
And then giving him the stupidest name.
Yes. Making him the worst person.
Wayne.
But, so anyway, Holy Wayne gets arrested for having child brides. And basically, so Christine is the name of the one girl who's pregnant, and she, like, essentially Tom, like, becomes responsible for her as far as, like, keeping her out of the limelight, making sure that, like, she is able to carry through the pregnancy of this child, which is supposed to be a son. And so...
Of course it is, you know?
Right, because girls suck, so...
Apparently.
They travel the country and have this whole, like, sort of, like, there, nothing ever happens between them either, but there's definitely, like, a romantic tension, and she's, like... Mm-hmm.
There's flirtation. They flirt with each other a little bit.
Yeah, and she's supposed to be, like, 16, and he's, like, what, 19 or something?
Yeah, he was, like, a freshman in college. Yeah. So
it's not super gross, at least. Mm-mm. Just a little gross. But nothing ever happens between them anyway. But she eventually gives birth, and she gives birth to a girl. And immediately, like, detaches from... And also, as that happens, like, Holy Wayne pleads guilty and is, like, admits that he was wrong and he did all of these horrible things and he's gonna go to jail and basically, like, denounces his relationship with her and the entire thing.
And she's pissed.
She's,
I mean, rightfully so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also, like, clearly experiencing, like, some postpartum depression stuff, because she is not attached to her baby at all. And basically has nothing, like, wants nothing to do with her, won't name her, like, won't touch her, won't hold her, and, you know, at the, like, towards the end of the book, basically, like, abandons Tom at a, like, gas station rest stop with the child, and so he's just kind of like, well, now I have this baby. But, like, I...
Well, now I have this baby.
What now? But I had, like, a discussion point earlier in the thing that it was interesting to me that, like, Tom's section of the story is, like, totally separate from everything else going on. Like, he's not in Mapleton. He is, like, the only character who's, like, far away from everything and is sort of, like, living out this little separate life. And I guess I was wondering, like, what do you guys think, like, that portion of the story, like, how does that serve the novel as a whole?
I think it's really interesting that this character's name is Tom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because the first thing I thought when I read that is I was like, as someone who writes sometimes, I would never name a character Emily.
Oh, I would never name a character Susan. Mostly because it wouldn't be believable, because it'd be like, what is she, 70?
I would never name a character Kelly because I hate my name, and...
I like my name, but I also kind of get pissed off when other people have my name. So, yeah. Which is dumb because a lot of people have my name. But yeah, it made me, like, I had to read into that a little bit, right? Like, why is this character?
Yeah, well, that has to be an intentional choice.
It has to be. You don't accidentally name someone the same name as you.
Right. And, like, granted, Tom is a very common name, but
yeah, still. But still, like, so is, like, John. Could have named
yeah, like, and
else.
Also, every time you write it, you're writing your own name.
Yeah.
Like, you obviously...
You're aware.
What's that about, though?
What's that about?
Why this character? I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder if, like, the themes in this book parallel in any way an experience that he had, and, like, Tom's reaction.
If he ever adopted a teen baby.
Or just the way that Tom deals with things is maybe similar to the way that
how he would deal with them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, like, it's interesting, the, like, cult aspect of it. Because, like, with the guilty remnant, we see, like, the whole inner workings of this cult. And we see, like, the entire – that storyline takes place, like, within the cult. But with Tom's cult – that he was a part of, like, we really only see the aftermath, because, like, by the, like, when we start with Tom, it's as the cult is dissolving and he is leaving and he is, like, basically fully disillusioned with the ideas of Holy Wayne, like, as we start the novel. Like, we get a brief explanation of how he ended up there, but then the rest of it is just him, like, kind of wandering. So, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, his storyline is, like, similar to his sisters in some ways, of just being this person who's kind of, like, lost. And, but, like, they deal with it in such different ways. But I wonder, like, if Jill was older, like, if she had been in college, like, would she be going on a similar path, like, that he was? Because she sort of has no choice because she's a minor and she's, like, in high school, you know?
I kind of, like, I thought a lot about, with Tom, what would I have done, like, my freshman year of college, as I was sort of just kind of starting my own life apart from everyone else. If something huge like that happened, like, would my reaction be run home or would it be run further?
Yeah, and it is interesting that, like, it's, like, the first semester of school and this horrible tragedy occurs and it's all the schools shut down. And you're, like, immediately forced back into this life that you willingly left a couple months ago and turns, like, this time of that's supposed to be very exciting and fun into something, like, horrifying. Mm-hmm. Anyway, to discuss the ending.
Yeah, go back to the ending now. Sorry.
Leading into that. So Tom is like, all right, I got the baby. I'm going to go. He and Christine were already on their way to his family's house. And he, like, didn't tell his dad or anything that he was coming. He's just like, I'm just going to show up there with this teenage mother and her baby and hope for the best,
I guess. Hashtag not my baby.
So,
well, it's kind of, like, he's kind of, like, he has no idea what's going to happen. Like, he doesn't know, I don't know, everything's so weird with her. Like, he's like, she could explode before we get there, for all I know, so I don't want to say anything, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of had a feeling she was going to run off as soon as she could, but...
Yeah, I did too.
She didn't seem too interested in staying with him. When he was, like, he has this whole, like, inner monologue where he's like, we're going to be a family now, and I was like, really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Of course, like, I totally understood that he would think that because he's, like, a 19-year-old and he's, like, idealizing, like, he's, like, the only problem with my situation with Christine is that Holy Wayne exists, but now he's not in the picture anymore, so everything's gonna be great.
And oh my god.
Obviously it doesn't work out that way, but so he...
That ain't true.
Yeah, he gets home and is, like, pulls up to his house and just is kind of, like, sitting there, and then leaves the baby, like, on the doorstep and drives away. And he leaves a note with the baby, like, this baby has no name, please take care of her. Like, some fucking, like, baby shoes for sale, never worn shit. And then, like, Nora is on her way to, like, deliver this letter that she's written to Kevin, like, her goodbye letter. And she walks up to the mailbox and there's a baby on the ground. And she's like, what? And she, like, starts, you know, she, like, looks down at the baby. Kevin comes home at that point. And she just, like, turns to him and she's like, has this baby. And she's like, look what I found. And that's, like, how it ends. Yeah. So what's going to happen?
It's all better now. They're going to be a family. Love each other.
Question is that a hopeful ending?
Yeah, to me it was very dark.
Yeah.
It felt very dark and a little, like,
feels a little
creepy.
Icky.
Yeah, it was, like, very unsettling. In theory, it's hopeful. But, like, clearly Nora is not in the correct mental state to, like, raise this child. Like, she's literally about to, like, leave town. She's bleached her hair. She's gonna, like...
But apparently it looks good. Yeah. Her hair looks great like that, so that's good.
That's good.
But knowing what we know about Kevin and how he, like, responds to women around him, I'm wondering if he sees her and thinks, like, she looks hot with blonde hair, if that's, like, his first.
Probably.
He's not even, like, looking at the baby. He's just like, man, I would love to get a blowjob from this girl with blonde hair.
Yeah, basically.
I'm just saying.
I'm pretty sure that's probably what happened. He, like, doesn't even recognize her when he's walking up. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I can't imagine that they would be able to, like, happily raise this child together.
No. It's a band-aid, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a band-aid. They're going to be like, oh, we can use this as a chance to, like, start over again. But it's like, okay, but there are all these other things that aren't fixed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then, meanwhile, another, like, part of the ending is that it turns out this whole time the cult has been having these mysterious deaths of cult members in the Guilty Remnant. But guess what? They're doing it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And Lori and Meg get chosen to live in this little house together, and they fall in love. We, like, didn't discuss any of this. There's so much going on.
Oh, my gosh. How did we not? So, meanwhile, Lori and Meg fall in love and cuddle in bed together.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's kind of like, do they have sex, or are they just in, like, a romantic yet platonic relationship? Like,
I mean, I thought that they were just, like, cuddling.
Yeah. But they're, like, in love also.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
You can be in love with your friends.
That's true.
I think.
They basically live like they're a couple. And in this, like, little, like, house, because this is where they send the people who are going to sacrifice themselves / each other for the good of the cult. Which, and so then, you know, Meg is the one who's going to die, and Lori, like, can't kill her, so Meg shoots herself, and then Lori gets taken away in a getaway car. Which is just, like, it was, like, such a... I knew that it was leading to some kind of dramatic conclusion in that way with that storyline. Yeah,
because you know that they weren't just going to send them to some house where they could be happy.
Right. And when, like, the first two dudes that they were living with, because the house has four people, so, like, like, a new two people enter when the other two people die, I guess.
Yes.
Or, you know, one dies and one... goes away. But, like, what is all yet again, like, what is the purpose?
I don't know. And also, like, I just kind of thought it was weird that they're sort of pushing them together before this happens, because, you know, they're like, don't you guys want to go stay in the bed together?
Right.
They're sort of pushing for them to get close with each other, knowing that this is going to be the outcome.
Right.
And I'm not sure.
I guess part of it is, like, the fact that, like, it makes it a greater sacrifice. And makes it more painful for the person left behind when you have, like, constructed that closeness.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me, though.
It's very weird. So, I don't even know if we have really time. I watched the first episode of the TV show. There are some notable changes already.
Yeah.
Emily, how much of it did you watch?
I watched the first couple of episodes, but I watched them when they first came out. And so, you know how it is when you watch something before you read?
Yeah.
Like, reading the book, I didn't really notice what was different. But I'm sure if I went back and watched it, I am planning on going back and watching the show now.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to notice all that stuff. So you probably have a better... I don't know, like, opinion on that than I do right now.
Well, just a couple of notable changes. Like, mostly in Kevin, because first of all, he is not the mayor. He is the police chief, and he is much angrier and much, like, more, like, emotionally affected by this whole thing than, like, the Kevin that we get in the book. So I'm interested like, to see how it, like, where it goes, because so far he's, like, a pretty different character than the character, like, I have come to love from this book. But right. he is played by Justin Theroux, so that helps. Also, the Holy Wayne situation is, like, a little bit different in that Tom is, like, at the, like, compound or whatever with Holy Wayne and the, like, teenage brides, and he's like mm-hmm. like flirting with Christine, like, and then Wayne calls him in and he's like, I see you flirting with her, like, I'm gonna make you her protector. So it's kind of, it's like a little bit more like personal, the fact that like he specifically is chosen to watch over Christine.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, I think both of those changes are more cinematic.
Yeah.
Right, because so much of Kevin and what we know about him as a character and how he feels is internal.
Yeah, that's true.
So you kind of have to emote a little bit more for a television show. All of the stuff that all of the things that happen with the cult, it's really interesting because Tom is very much like a part of the cult. Like, he's like one of the early adopters, I guess.
Yeah.
But he's also sort of like out recruiting. He's not like in the middle of the action.
Right.
And I think that's not as interesting to watch.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of put him there where the cult leader is and all the like,
yeah,
all of his hoes and all that, because just like hearing about all it, because hoes. That's all it is. Because like, well, in the book, all it is like, you know, I hear that this is his setup now and this is what he talks about, right. But like, that doesn't work as well.
Right. And then the final change that I thought was like a pretty big change. And I only watched the first episode, but the first episode ends with the like, you know, Heroes Day celebration when, like, the guilty remnant comes and holds up signs during Nora's speech that say, stop wasting your breath. And right. in the book, it's very, like, it ends very passively, and they sort of just, like, leave, and it's, like, not a big deal. Like, it's uncomfortable, but it's not, like... But in the show, it ends with a full-out riot. Like, people are beating the shit out of each other. Like... Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting change, too, because it sort of, like, makes the guilty remnant more of, like, a solid presence than they are, because in the book it's kind of like everyone's like main strategy is to ignore them.
Yeah, but again, that's not interesting.
Well, now I'm excited to watch. I haven't seen any of it yet.
Yeah, it's good.
But
so
I got
far.
A good I mean, little I'm... synopsis of the first episode just now, so I feel yeah.
well. Be yeah. just be warned that there is some dog violence.
What? Wait, no. Violence against dogs.
Well, yeah, because you know how, like, there's the packs of dogs yeah. that are get, yeah. like, it doesn't really go into detail in the book but, that much, but, like, there's, like, we're killing, but, like, people go out and try to shoot these dogs.
Okay.
So there's some of that going on.
Good to know.
Ugh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that either, but I do really want to watch the show.
Yeah, just be prepared for that.
Fine.
You know. Unfortunate animal violence trigger warning, but it is HBO, yeah. so it's going to ruin your life somehow.
Right, yeah. If it's not that, it's some other trigger that I didn't know I even had.
Ambient rape. As Mary would say.
Yeah. I mean, good thing Mary wasn't here, honestly, because this podcast could have been like 2 hours long.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's already, we're already an hour and a half just on the book.
So. I know.
Mary... We miss you, Mary. I was just kidding.
I'm going to... Yeah. I'll rate it. You want me to rate it?
Yeah, go.
I'm going to give this one a 4. I really, really enjoyed it. Woo! A lot. This is the... I've enjoyed this more than anything in a while, actually. Like, and I listened to the audiobook, and I finished it this morning, which is why I haven't watched any of this show yet, because I haven't had a chance.
Oh, it's fine.
But, it was, like, the perfect thing to listen to while I was traveling. I was just, like, so into it the whole time. I thought all of the characters were really well fleshed out, and this the whole concept is really interesting to me, and I think it tackles a lot of big issues in interesting and varied ways, which is great. Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. I really liked it. So 4 stars.
Yay!
Okay. Well, I also gave this a 4, and I agree pretty much with everything Susan said. I feel like I was going to add something, but then like Kelly, you threw me off a little bit. So let me think about this for a second.
Stupid bitch.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. I also think that Tom Perata did a really great job of balancing a lot of different characters and a lot of different storylines in a book that isn't really that long. It's like 350 pages.
It felt longer though, right?
Yeah, I could definitely reading it, like how the obviously I haven't finished watching the show or anything, like I said earlier, but how the show could definitely take this material and expand on it a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
However, I didn't feel like I wasn't getting enough of any like, I still felt like I knew all of these characters really well, even though he was juggling a lot of characters, so that's really impressive.
Yeah.
I thought. Yeah.
He's a good writer.
Yeah. He is.
I also am giving it a 4. Oh, my God.
What?
Yeah, I really liked it, too. I agree with everything you guys said. And just, like, also... Like, it's such, like, an easy read while not being, like, overly simplistic in the writing. Like, the writing style is just really nice and clean and, like, reads well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated that. Because it's not, like, it's not flowery language at all, but it's still very, like, poignant and...
There's a lot of dialogue in his books, generally, which I actually enjoy.
Yeah. And it's good dialogue.
It's very well-written dialogue, but it moves really fast.
This is my first book of his that I've read, so I'm excited to read some other ones. If you guys want to tell me your favorite ones, that'd be great.
So I can mention a couple. A lot of his books have been made into movies, so you might be familiar with Election.
Hold on.
Yes, he wrote that book.
Why didn't I know that? I feel dumb right now.
No, you shouldn't.
That's one of my favorite movies, though.
Yeah, so you should definitely read that book. Also, Little Children, he wrote that, which was a Kate Winslet joint.
Also a good movie.
Yes, also a great movie. And The Abstinence Teacher is the other one that I've read. And it's about a teacher that has to do, like, abstinence-only sex ed and feels morally conflicted about it. So that was one I was really excited about reading. But he's really into writing about sort of, like, bizarre suburbia.
Yeah, into reading about bizarre suburbia, so I'm here for it.
Yeah, I definitely am going to read more of his stuff now.
Yeah, me too.
I really enjoy this.
Well, next time Tom and I talk on the phone, I will let him know.
Thanks, Emily.
No, tell him hey for me.
I will.
Tell him like, I said hey, 4 stars.
He'll be like, where's that 5th star, though? Where'd it go?
Hey, I reserve that for room.
So, unfortunately, this week we don't have any listener feedback on books that we have read. So, on book.
Nobody wanted to write in about Super Extra Grande. I'm so shocked.
Yeah.
Well, no one read it.
Wow.
No, I know people did. That's
actually no. They I do know a few people who read it, so I'm just gonna tell them to write it. I'll personally contact them.
But seriously, we get so much more feedback on our other sodes, even though I know that people are reading along with us. So please write in your thoughts about any books that you have read along with us with, any questions you have that you want us to discuss, or just like general comments about them if you read along with us on this one, or if you've read it and you're just listening and you already read it a long time ago, please.
Or like if you watched the show and you want to write in about
that. Yeah, that works too. And don't feel like in any way intimidated. Like you've heard us, right? We say some crazy probably dumb stuff. So
I sound like a dumbass all the time. So please write to
us. Anywho, we're sorry.
Yeah. The title of this episode is Sorry, Sorry, Sorry.
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 Okay. What's on the blog?
The blurg.
What's on the book squad?
I don't know, Susan. What's on the blog?
Yeah. So I have a post up about my favorite true crime book of all time so far called People Who Eat Darkness by Richard Lloyd Perry. It's about a crime that I had never even heard of until I read this book, and I loved it so much that I read it a second time, which I don't often do with nonfiction. So I give some reasons why I think you might love it as well, especially if you're into true crime. This is one you should definitely check out.
Awesome.
I have also read it. I listened to the audiobook. The audiobook is a very good option for this one. Just saying.
So no true crime gritty voice.
Because I listened to it on one of my
go through.
He's British and yes. Bit of a slow talker.
So Mary probably would not
Mary would not like it because she hates
British people.
Yeah. So weird. She's not even sorry. She just hates them. So anyway, kind of a slow talker, but it's, I don't know. I find nonfiction really easy to listen to, even when the narrator's not, like, the best thing in the world. So,
yes.
If you listen to enough audiobooks and your name is not Mary, you'll probably be fine with the audio version. I listened to it, on a road trip once, and, like, it's, like, a 12-hour book, and I had a 6-hour trip there, 6-hour trip back. It was completely perfect. I know. I loved it.
That sounds
perfect. But it's just, it's really good. However you consume it.
Just get you some.
Oh, transition into featured bookstore. Because that book I was talking about was a true crime book,
you have can linked totally in the blog
to our most recent featured bookstore, Murder by the Book. Emily?
Yeah! Murder by the Book. It's in Houston, Texas. And it's awesome. If you want to know more about it, you can check my blog post about it. Also, check Susan's blog post because she links to it. And if you go to the website, they sell all their stuff online, including their super cool murdery totes and t-shirts and mugs and signed books by different murdery writers.
Murder! So
get you some. Murder.
Get you some moira.
Get you some murder. Also on the blog, I am doing So You Think You Can Dance recaps. And I have waited until this week because I think the auditions are shitty and I hate that they take so long.
Also, you can do whatever you want. So,
yeah. We're finally getting into the live show and I have opinions about, you know, who's awesome and who sucks. And the people who suck are Vanessa Hudgens and Nigel Lithgow because they're terrible judges. So I will be talking about that. There's going to be, I mean, I don't know yet because it's early days, but I'm assuming there's probably going to be a weekly section where I talk about specific things that Vanessa and Nigel do that are shitty.
Like a Nigel racism count.
Yes, there will definitely be a Nigel racism count because he is super racist. And Vanessa, I mean, I love you, girl. High School Musical is my jam. But, honey, you do not know how to judge a dance competition show. That's all I'm saying. So check out that. Also, not out yet, but coming soon because guess what's coming back this week?
Oh, my God.
It's Are You the One? So Are You the One recaps will be back. And I am so pumped. So get ready for that. If you're not watching Are You the One, it's starting this week. So get on it. Get on it. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Awesome.
A lot of recaps. Yeah.
So many recaps. I'm really spreading myself thin here, but I don't care. Speaking of, YA Book Club in Paradise is running a little late, but it should be on the blog by now. I'm just a little behind on my reading, guys. This is totally on me. But Mary and I are reading Three Dark Crowns. And Mary has finished it. I'm working on it. Should be done by the time this comes out. Mary says that she ended up liking it and thought about purchasing the sequel, which is interesting because when she first started reading it, she said it was really crappy. And she was like, do we actually have to talk about this? So I'm really excited to talk to her about the book and see, like, what...
where it changed.
Like, how the sudden, like, turn of... this was, like, a really weird twist.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a very twisty and turny edition of YA Book Club
Sounds
in Paradise.
Sounds really sexy. I'm can't wait.
The most dramatic YA Book Club in Paradise yet.
Ever. Yes. Yeah.
You can get to our blog by visiting our website, booksquadgoals.com/blog, or just go to booksquadgoals.com and click blog.
Two ways to get there, very similar.
Yes. Also, you can follow us on social media to keep up with all of our blog posts, as well as other announcements and fun and cute pictures of our pets.
At Book Squad
we
Goals.
We are at Book Squad Goals.
Everywhere.
And
Twitter.
And everywhere. If you want to send us feedback on blogs, other episodes, or full episodes, a.k.a. book episodes, you should book episodes, full episodes, whatever you want to call them. If you want to give us some feedback on any of those things, all of that can be emailed to thesquad@booksquadgoals.com and we will read it.
On to
that is THESQUAD at.
You guys, I have a follow up to one of our listener emails from last time.
Oh, yes.
It's just a text message, so it's real quick.
Okay.
Michael, who emailed us about Hereditary. and
we know you, Michael.
Remember he ate the flatbread? Said, Michael, write in and tell us how you managed to eat the flatbread because, you know, Hereditary was like real fucked up. I asked him and he said, LOL. I scarfed it down before the previews even ended because I knew I'd be too scared during the movie. Probably set a world record for flatbread consumption.
That also, I mean, that sounds impressive, but stop for a minute and think about how long previews last.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
I could eat a 5-course meal during the previews.
Yeah, you could eat a whole pizza, not just a flatbread.
Yeah.
But I do like that he made sure he ordered it, like, way ahead of time because he was like, I'm going to be too scared. I've got to get this in me. I've got to have nourishment and sustenance to get through this. And he was right. Yes, so that is Michael's final thoughts on Hereditary.
Thanks, Michael. If you have more thoughts on Hereditary, please feel free to share.
Yes.
Don't tempt him. He'll do it.
Okay.
Finally, please consider leaving us a rating and review.
Matt, finally, we have to talk about our next episode.
Are you listening to me?
Okay.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was telling people to rate and review us.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Rate and review us. God. Okay.
I'm sorry.
What's our next... Emily, please, tell us what our next episode is.
You know what it's not about?
So...
Sharp objects.
So we're really sorry, but last episode, we got real excited about
rightfully
sharp objects.
So.
I'm still very excited about sharp objects.
Don't worry, we are doing an episode.
Oh, are we ever?
Just as a little aside, because I know that my father is near and dear to this podcast, as we would all call him, were we in a cult. My dad finally caught up with Sharp Objects today, and he was texting me about it earlier, and he was like, maybe we should start a podcast called Emily and Dad Talk About TV Shows.
I would subscribe in a heartbeat.
That is a very catchy name for a podcast, too.
Your email is Emily and Dad.
I'm down for that. If you want to do like Emily and Dad Talk About TV Shows, we can do that.
That should be a blog series.
We could
think
do
about
that.
It. Yeah, consider it. Hey, Charlie, consider it.
Yeah. Look, we're having this look, this is real. We're having this brainstorm right now. You're seeing the beginning of something special. But anyway, our next other soda is not Sharp Objects. That will be the next other soda, because we actually have to wait for the show to actually, like, be done before we can talk about it. however, not only am I buds with Tom Parada, I'm also buds with lots of authors, including Grady Hendrix, who you might remember from our very special spooky episode all about Horror Store.
Yes.
Or you might remember from me and Mary talking about how much we love My Best Friend's Exorcism pretty much in every episode.
Yes.
But Grady Hendrix has a new book coming out called We Sold Our Souls. And speaking of metal bands, it is about a metal band, and one of the members of the band sells the souls of the rest of the band members in order to, like, become famous and rich.
Extremely himself. Rude.
Yeah, super rude. But that's what this book is about. It's super awesome, and I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with him about this, not once, but twice. I'll explain. You'll have to wait until the next other episode, and I'll explain.
Yes.
Next full episode, that's our next book episode, I am so excited about, guys, because I'm the only one who's read Ton of French before, right?
I think so.
I am introducing you guys to my favorite mystery author, Tana French. We are going to be discussing her newest book, The Trespasser, which is the only one of her books that I haven't read. And I have been waiting to read it because I wanted to read it with you guys. But I love her. I love her books. And so I'm hoping that this one lives up to all the hype that I've been putting behind her, because I've definitely been hyping her.
Woo!
But yeah. I'm super excited.
I'm excited too. I never, like, read mysteries, so I'm looking forward to it.
And, you know, like, there are a lot of crappy mystery books out there.
Oh, yes.
Like, let's just be real. But Tana French is actually, like, she's doing quality work out there. So if you're one of those people who's like, I want to read mystery, but I'm not quite sure what to read because it's hard to wade through all the crap, like, Tana French, I highly recommend, like, all of her books.
Woo!
So, there you go.
Very exciting.
Yay, I have one of her books, yes, like, in my Audible queue.
Ooh, which one?
The first one, I think. In the Woods?
Okay, In the Woods, yeah. Cool.
So, this episode is super fucking long. And hopefully I will be able to cut it down, but if I didn't manage to cut it down very much, I apologize. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
We love you. And we're sorry. We're sorry. Sorry.
We're so sorry.
Okay, bye, though.
Bye, sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, bye. Sorry, I gotta go, bye.